Morning, everybody. This is News Radio 94.9 890 KDXU. It's Wednesday and time for Pathway Hospice and Palliative Care Show. Here's Richard and Kaylee.
Good morning, Andy. We're excited to be here. Welcome to all of you to Southern Utah's first and only elder care program, brought to you by Pathway Hospice and Palliative Care, your resource for all your senior care needs. My name is Kaylee, and this is Richard.
Oh, sorry.
he missed his cue.
Yeah, I did. So we feel it's important to start telling everybody about all the little things about us that I think make it important that we're here. We discovered through our personal experiences that Southern Utah needs a strong palliative program. With 21.5% of the community being 65 and older, that's about 45,000 people.
Wow.
And in that elder care area, I think most people don't have a good understanding of what it could or should be. So we are really trying very hard to bring that information out and do some things. So we're going to talk about that today.
Through our personal experiences, we discovered how important it really was to create a company where anyone could call to help navigate the healthcare and senior care system. We can answer all your questions and help you find the resources that you may qualify for that can help you. Your family members or even neighbors that you know that may need a little extra assistance.
Many of you don't realize that there's an Alzheimer's Association that has resources for your family as well as the patient, and a liver foundation, a kidney foundation, an advocacy for Parkinson's disease and ALS, all of these elder care-related issues.
Did you know there were so many community resources available, Andy?
I really didn't. That's amazing.
It is amazing. And most of our seniors have a hard time finding those resources, be it that they, you know, don't have the tech savvy to navigate the internet, or just not realizing that there is help available to them for companionship, for help in their home. There are a multitude of resources. Just give us a call at Pathway Hospice and Palliative Care, and we can help you find the resources that are available to you.
So we're here to help you to navigate that medical system and to become your own best medical advocate. So today we want to talk about some advances in medical technology, or at least information, some things that aren't as well known in the community as we think they should be. In our focus on elder care, it's important for everybody to realize that medicine and medical care changes. You know, as we're young, we have a different focus than we do as we get older, and the care that we have should change also. For instance, we break a bone, or one of our kids breaks a bone. You cast it, you wait a few weeks, they're as good as new. In fact, that bone is technically stronger. But that same break in our elderly parents may be even life-threatening and may never heal properly. So we really want to bring this information up for people so that they can integrate that into their own care, to talk to their doctors, because we want people to have better communication with their doctors. So what we really want to talk about today is something that has been studied and is continuing to be studied, but there's real good evidence of improvements that are available.
And of course, as treatments are different for us, for elderly versus youth, younger people, the expected outcomes should be different as well. So as we talk about, treatments and things that might help improve the treatments that are available, we should be mindful that the outcomes can also be different from individual to individual.
Right. Your expectation has to change as your circumstances change. That's a critical point. So in this, we're going to talk about cancer today. Again, one of those topics that everybody likes to talk about, and we're bringing up on the radio. But it's trying to improve the outcome of whatever cancer you have. And every cancer is different, but there are some studies that have been shown that we personally can have an impact on how we are, what our outcome is going to be in our cancer treatments. So we really want to get into detail on that.
Well, and we hope we can bring a new understanding to the community when it comes to the best options for healthcare that are available for the maturing adult.
So I brought a bunch of data from three different articles about studies that were done, and it's this simple. Fasting has an impact, and it has a measurable and effective impact when it comes to care for cancer. So we've got a whole, I've got a bouquet of data here that we're going to get through and talk about it. But just the mere idea of fasting before and after a chemotherapy treatment or a radiation treatment seems to have a significant impact on the outcome.
Findings from several animal studies showed that fasting appeared to both reduce toxicity and increase efficiency and when coupled with chemotherapy to improve the outcome of cancer treatments.
So there were 10 patients that were treated and they fasted, and by fasted that's water and vitamins only, for 48 to 140 hours before their treatment and 5 to 56 hours following a chemotherapy treatment. And they had a greater tolerance to the treatment. Afterwards, they felt less fatigue, less weakness, less gastrointestinal symptoms compared to those who hadn't fasted during that same time. So fasting allows us to overcome the bad parts of that chemotherapy. For those that have never been on chemotherapy, you may not have an understanding of how debilitating it can be. For those that have, everybody's different, but they all have had those experiences. And to reduce those symptoms by fasting is a great idea. And that's just on that part of it. But there's another study where it was breast cancer, and they had a number of people who, and I'm looking for that particular item right now.
While you look for that, let me say that animal data and clinical findings from two small studies suggested that fasting during cancer treatment is not harmful and may be beneficial. Since it is easy to do and within a person's control, why not try it if it's going to increase the likelihood of success that chemotherapy and even radiation therapy might have?
So in this breast cancer study, of those that fasted before, they had a 36% increase in success over those that didn't. And again, that fasting was 48 hours prior to and 24 hours after. It's interesting, to talk about fasting. Most of us look at that in a number of different ways. Some of us would think that that's a way to lose weight. The first part of fasting doesn't actually help us lose weight. What it does is it allows our bodies to adjust for hard times. And we actually build up protections in the body. And part of that protection is the reduction in fat loss. We become more efficient. But the fasting part allows our cells to build tolerances or protections against outside bad circumstances, and chemotherapy is intended to be bad. The interesting thing is that it appears that cancer cells don't get that same signal. So while we're protecting the rest of the cells of our body, our cancer cells are still trying to reproduce rapidly and using as much energy as it can, and so that chemotherapy becomes even more effective in reducing those cancer cells. So it's important to understand the biology of this, that it's about trying to make a real distinction in our body's cells between what a cancer cell is and what a safe and protective cell is. And fasting seems to do a lot towards that.
I'm letting Richard talk a little bit about, the outcomes. I like to continue to drop little studies or statistics so that we can support the claim. In a 2016 study, 20 patients receiving platinum-based regimens fasted for up to 72 hours, 48 hours pre-chemotherapy and 24 hours post-chemotherapy infusion. They were instructed to consume no calories and to drink water and non-caloric beverages. If symptoms related to fasting occurred, such as feeling faint or weak, they could consume a small amount of juice or food, but less than 200 calories in that 24-hour period. There were no 3-grade toxicities attributed to fasting, and laboratory studies revealed no evidence of malnutrition. Yet, the researchers discovered that the effects of the chemotherapy and radiation improved their success rates by 10% or better.
So let me throw in here that this is not an overall absolute for everybody. Everybody is unique and different, and there are reasons why this may work for some and not for others. Different cancers are handled differently. In fact, some cancers have a genetic predisposition to protect themselves while fasting, and so in some cases there is no improvement by fasting. But those are conversations to have with your doctor.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. I think the takeaway from this message really is just to consider that the discussion should be had with your provider to just explore the options in your type of cancer. If treatment can improve the outcome, if fasting can improve the outcome of the treatment, by all means, explore that option with your provider.
And while this isn't... I guess, real recent information. Some of these studies go back to the early 1900s in testing animals and cancer and finding out that fasting has worked. It seems to be fairly new information in the community. And in fact, a lot of doctors, even those in the oncology area, haven't really integrated this into their practice. So it's important for you, being your own best medical advocate, to bring this information to your doctor and have that discussion. It's not that you're going to make decisions for them. In fact, you should let your doctor know that you're fasting if that's going to be the case. And, you know, get him involved in that so that he can help you determine whether or not that's going to be effective and how effective it can be and how to accomplish it the best.
Should we mention why we feel this is an important topic and what brought this up?
Yes, but I had one other point. Fasting, again, everybody's unique. It may be very effective for you, but there are some issues that you need to consider. One of those issues is that for those who are malnourished, those who are losing weight, you know, the extremes in cancer care, weight loss is a real concern. So for those that have lost weight or are diabetic, fasting has a negative impact on the body. So those are a couple of things that you want to take into account when considering this. Don't just run off and do something because you heard something on the radio or read it on the internet. Just integrate that information and have a better, more complete conversation with your doctor.
We work with a multitude of doctors here in town, one of which happens to do a tremendous amount of work with supplemental cares to cancer treatments. So while the cancer doctors and the cancer clinics work on the cancer treatments, he works directly with the patients to overcome the symptoms of chemotherapy and radiation treatment. And during one recent visit with him, it was brought to our attention how he was dealing with the or had suggested the fasting around the chemotherapy, and the oncologist said, "Oh no, that's not even necessary. You know, that you don't need to fast. It's hard enough to be dealing with the chemotherapy that you're dealing with. Just go ahead and live life like you normally would. Get a good breakfast before you come into chemotherapy treatment." Yet at the end of chemotherapy, the way that they would feel with the nausea and the overcoming the treatment was just unbearable, just very, very difficult. And once they implemented the fasting 24 hours prior to the chemotherapy and then having the infusion or the chemotherapy, it was incredible how much quicker they rebounded. So they came into the office and had kind of given their testimony of the benefits of the fasting treatment around chemotherapy and radiation therapy.
So, and we keep getting more information. We're doing, you know, our own research all the time to find the best therapies available, the best services that we can provide. But along those lines, we also come into information that isn't necessarily directly hospice-related, but certainly is elder care-related, and we want to share that with the community.
And we really do want to be your senior care information specialists, so that if you're having trouble navigating the system, we can help direct you to answer questions or to the right questions to ask your physicians as you go through these tumultuous times of ailments and difficulties that come up as we age.
So I'd like to deep dive into this a little bit and talk about some of the different specifics of calorie reduction or fasting and how that affects this. And again, there's a number of studies. They've all come to some conclusions that overlap, but there are some specific differences. So let's talk about four different ways of approaching this. Calorie reduction would be just reducing 20 to 40% of the calories that you take in over time, okay? And then intermittent calorie reduction would be on a particular day, you would reduce your calorie intake by 50 to 70%, and then you go back to your normal calorie intake the following day, and then again, another day of reduced calories. So that would be intermittent calorie reduction. And fasting comes in those two flavors also. Continuous fasting, where we avoid everything for a day or several days or, you know, even longer. Or intermittent fasting, where we are taking a significant part of our day and not eating. And so intermittent fasting usually is in the 16 to 18 hours of no eating, and then having a normal level of food within that last 6 to 8 hours of the day, or any 6 to 8 hours of the day. So those all have different different options and different outcomes. So these are all conversations. We are just starting the conversation here. We really want you to continue this with your doctor as to what may be most effective. And if he's not sure, then maybe a little research will help narrow that down. So one of the studies that they came into was that intermittent fasting every other day had a great effect, a better effect than continuous fasting. And so in some ways that may be a better option. When we're talking about calorie reduction, that's what all of this is. Here's a statement. Unlike calorie reduction, fasting induces changes associated with cellular protection to actually protect against weight loss initially and increases protection from oxidative stress. Fasting results in a more significant drop in insulin levels compared with calorie reduction. Given that insulin levels play a role in cancer risk, these differences are potentially clinically important. So the calorie reduction part, where we just starve ourselves or eat less, may not be as effective as just taking those few days or few hours and not eating at all. And it's interesting to realize that throughout history, almost every culture has an understanding of fasting as being beneficial. It helps the mind, the body, and the spirit in all those cultures. And so these studies go back centuries, not just years, when we really look at it. So it's great that this information that's been around a long time is starting to come into the mainstream and getting integrated to help people deal with cancer. So let me transition now to another part of this, and that is that most cancer treatment is palliative. It doesn't necessarily cure. When we go through chemotherapy or radiation, the goal is that we are reducing the number of cancer cells. In theory, you might be able to reduce them to zero, but in practice, they're trying to reduce them. Surgery will try and remove all the cancer cells that are within a certain area, but if those cancer cells have already migrated to other parts of the body, then that's not going to be the case. So when we're looking at chemotherapy and radiation as palliative care and realizing that it's not going to cure, then we can have a different perspective on whether or not continuing that care is really the best palliative solution. And by that, let's use that palliative word of providing comfort and a better feeling or well-being. At some point, if you've gone through 16 rounds of chemotherapy and that hasn't resolved it, then maybe it's time to consider that chemotherapy is not the solution and that radiation may not be the solution. And these are the hard things for people to come to grips with, but that there may be no solution. But I just want to make sure that everybody understands that all of the things that are done to resolve cancer are mostly going to reduce the cancer cells, postpone the fact that that's going to come back and be a problem.
And keywords in cancer are things like metastasizing and remission, right? So let me just summarize just a little quickly here. So can fasting or calorie restrictions help your body fight the cancer? Could it also help cancer treatment be more effective? The claim is this: fasting and calorie restrictions can slow and even stop the progression of cancer, kill cancer cells, boost the immune system, and significantly improve the effectiveness of chemotherapy and radiation therapy. Now, again, that is the claim, but it is something to be explored on an individual basis. What is it? First, let's define calorie restriction versus fasting and explore the history around these two practices. Calorie restriction means limiting the consumption of food without resulting in malnutrition to less than what an organism would eat if given free access to the food. Fasting, on the other hand, is voluntarily not eating any food for varying lengths of time. Fasting has been used as a therapy for many different conditions as well as part of a spiritual or religious practice throughout all of history and time. So although this is, it has relatively limited studies, it's not going to hurt you to try to see if it improves the effect of the treatment you're receiving for cancer, such as chemotherapy and radiation. So possibly explore the option to see if the outcome for you is beneficial, if the results are positive for you as an individual, since we know it is not likely to harm you in any way. But do discuss it with your healthcare professional.
Right, because it's important to realize that all of this information is great information, but we don't want to start making unreasonable claims based upon that and claim that it's going to cure cancer. Fasting probably won't cure cancer. While there are studies that have shown that fasting can improve your immune system, that doesn't mean that a three-day fast is going to perfect your immune system.
But fasting is one of the oldest therapies in medicine. Many renowned physicians throughout history and many of the oldest healing systems have recommended fasting as an integral method of healing and prevention.
Right. So fasting is good as long as we accept that it is not a cure-all. But it ideally is going to work with the other things that we're doing in our life to try and overcome these problems. And so it's really trying to integrate that in. And then the other part of it is that we have to consider that if we are malnourished, if we are have already lost a lot of weight, losing weight can be disadvantageous to the body, or if we have diabetes, then fasting may not be an appropriate addition to a clinical protocol for cancer. So those are some of the interesting points that we wanted to bring up today. We really appreciate this opportunity to share with the community and bring things up that are going to be hopefully useful. We'd like you to share this information with those that you know so that that information can get out there so that we have more people that can do it. And if you have any questions about what we've talked about today, about what we've talked about on any of the other shows, or a question that we haven't addressed, please give us a call. And we'd love to answer those questions for you, maybe include them in our next radio broadcast. Because we really want to address the information that the community wants to hear.
Yeah, like everybody. Sorry, Andy. I just want everybody to know that we're sharing this, an experience that we had or some information that we received this week that really, really helps some of our patients that we work with. And I just wanted to let everybody know that you can give us a call. Pathway Hospice and Palliative Care, 435-477-6999.